Hello.
Hello, Allison.
Hi, Joanne. Hi.
Is this still a good time for you?
Absolutely.
Good.
I'm ready to go. How are you?
I'm well. And how about you?
Good. Yeah, I'm fine. Totally fine.
Where are you?
I'm in my studio. I'm in Hudson, New York.
And is that where your full-time studio is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
We've been here for almost 18 years, I think.
Oh, my.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
You were pioneers.
I've been ready to leave for the past 8, I think.
And where do you want to leave to?
Just quieter. I want more nature out my window.
Yeah. Well, Hudson has really expanded in population, I assume, considerably in the 18 years you've been there.
Completely. And I think we're going to see a little bit more coming this summer.
For sure.
And, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you've managed to stay well. I have no doubt you've managed to stay busy and engaged, which, I guess in some ways for certain artists, this has been a blessing to slow down and have some quiet and space. So I imagine that's what you've experienced.
In some degree, not maybe exactly how you would expect. I do have 2 children.
Ah, okay. Say no more.
So, yeah. My son, who is older, he's almost 15. It's very different. My daughter, who's 8 and a half, it's different. So it's been a very quiet. I come out to my studio daily, and for the most part, I've just been sitting in my studio and trying to digest and think through things. But I'm just Monday, I kind of began. I'm starting to feel like able to approach making something.
I understand. I mean, I think the change in family life has to have been overwhelming, and the demands of having the children present 24 hours a day and assisting them is a full-time job unto itself.
It is.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're making your way back. Yes?
Yeah, no, it's also just about this time is about adjusting. And, like, for me, I've had to kind of let go of my routines that I've always had and how I like to do things, right? Because it doesn't quite work that way anymore. where everyone's out of the house by 7 or 7:15, and then I roll. So it's just also trying to be open to new patterns of working and time.
And it does take time, and I find that things happen in waves. I'm adjusting in waves. Things feel comfortable for a couple of weeks, and then I come into a new zone, and I have to adapt again. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens when you return more. More focused. Allison, tell me about your early years. I'm interested to know when and how art began to enter your life.
Gosh, art has always been in my life since I was a child. That was my go-to place in life, was always in making things. And then I went to college to a fine arts school, and I think there started to clarify my visual language. And it was really through writing while I was at school, and writing as a way to, let's see, I mean, it originally started because I wasn't always comfortable with the written language and the formalities. So I made a space for myself writing with a typewriter that could keep up with my thoughts. And I would bicycle. I went to school in Boston and I lived in Cambridge, so I would bicycle down Mass Ave over the bridge to school, go up the library and write at the typewriter there when I was at school, and it was a very fluid stream of consciousness way of writing, something that caught my eye on my time from the bike ride to school. And then it would just roll. And when I stopped and when I had to pause for too long and I thought, like, I was beginning to think too much, then the writing was over for me and I walked away. And I actually did, all I did was write for one semester at school like that. I was also questioning art making and meaning, and, you know, I was 20, in my early 20s. So, but then it was through the writing that I came to the mark making and the tool for drawing, which is what I've been doing. I've been using the typewriter for all these years. What is it, like 20 years? Yeah.
It sounds like you were able to transform a mechanical device into an extension of your body and your hands, fingers,
yeah,
to express, yeah, what you typically would have done manually.
I think it makes sense. I think there's something that was kind of comfortable about the mechanical gesture, and that I, like, a pencil was never that comfortable in my hand, I think, because my mind and my thoughts got in the way of that and felt that it was supposed to, you know, when you made a drawing, that had so much specific weight to it, what that meant. And so using the typewriter gave me some distance somehow. And it also helped me value and appreciate a line that is not perfectly straight, because I really loved, like, you know, my dream was a straight line, like a beautiful line, but nothing I ever made was straight and clear. And so the line of the typewriter has a lot of movement because of the, you know, it's a machine, but it has imperfections. And I love the imperfections.
Yeah. I mean, different weights of your hand on the machine and before the advent of electric, I guess. When you were younger and you said art has always been, come from an artistic family?
My father is artistic, but he never pursued it. He's also kind of a musician. He's always been into jazz and played piano intuitively. And I would say it kind of is channeled through him. He definitely was the more artistic, creative parent. And my parents both let me. They didn't kind of inhibit my creativity, I would say. They didn't particularly get involved in any way, but they didn't prevent it.
And when you were involved in art at that young age, what were you doing? What were you making? What materials were you using?
I think kind of everything. I mean, I liked doing things, building stuff with, you know, materials. I drew, but I wasn't, you know, like, my daughter can sit and draw with focus, and she just goes, you know, when she's up for it, she'll just sit and draw incredible, you know, her world, her images. I wasn't quite like that. I just like to make things. I like to build, whether I was like building with mud and making sculptural things, or with sticks, with clay, with, yeah, I just feel like whatever was around was what I would make something with when I was very young. Yeah, and I always loved art class in grade school and high school.
I read somewhere where you said something about you see your work as sculpture and you build a drawing. So it's interesting that you talk about building at that young age and what it eventually became for you as part of your DNA, as part of your artistry.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, I do think of most of my work as object. I don't look at it as a strictly two-dimensional thing. And my definition of drawing is so open and vast. But when I was in school, I was making really clumsy sculpture, clumsy because things wouldn't, I kept wanting them to do one thing and then they wouldn't. But then I started to realize that's my mark or my hand. And so I came to kind of love the imperfections. But yeah, I still will periodically build things in my studio that I think of as three-dimensional drawings made out of, you know, for a while I was making a lot of paper mache objects that kind of looked like drawings that came off the page and are literally a three-dimensional form. I just think, though, it's just more interesting for me to talk about and look at my work as objects. It just feels more open for discussion and thought.
I understand that. I remember when I first began to pay attention to works on paper. And I was just beginning to explore. I had come across an earlier work of yours. It was hanging freely on a wall. I'm pretty sure it was yours, and it was typed, but it was all kind of hanging.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was white. And I remember being captivated by it, but I couldn't get my head around it,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a drawing. And, of course, now I came to it again. I came back to it, and now I wish I had that piece. But I think about that when you're talking about building, because mm-hmm. it felt like a structure. It felt like an object.
Yeah.
And so it was hard for me at that. I didn't have enough experience to discern that was something that I needed to respond to and to think of as for the collection. But at the time, it was just so foreign to me. But I remember how beautiful I thought it was.
Mm. Gosh.
Tell me about your studio practice. Every artist employs different methods, different disciplines in studio activities and presence. And since I can't be in yours in person, maybe you can tell me a little bit about your studio practice.
Yeah. I actually love my studio. It's especially these days, it's kind of a very peaceful, quiet space for me. And I stand when I work. So I have a very big, long table with my custom-built typewriter on it. And then I have this other kind of mobile workstation that has three typewriters on it that I can roll around and move in my studio, depending on where I want to be or what I want to look at. My studio is not very big. I think it's maybe 500 square feet. And then I have a beautiful red IBM Selectric that is also elevated on an old work table. And that is the typewriter I use to write if I want to actually write correspondence with anyone. I don't use that typewriter for drawing. And then I have a desk where I'm sitting at now. It's not really a desk. It's just kind of a work table for cutting things. Or I actually, now and again, sketch, which I hadn't done until probably, I think about 2013, I started sketching as a way to help me open and think about the forms and the landscape I was looking at and what part of those views I wanted to explore on the paper. So that has been really helpful. But yeah, so I actually love standing. I haven't always stood working, but I guess for 5 or 6 years after I began a more formal, in-depth conversation with another artist, Helen Mira, who a lot of her practice is weaving and standing. So with her, which always made sense to me in my studio, I just hadn't gotten there, but it was really liberating.
So your tables are elevated?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like my the movable one used to be a shelf of cubbies that's elevated on a, you know, I had a metal stand fabricated with casters and a clip light on so I can roll that around. But yeah, everything is now at a height for my body, for my proportions, so I can stand and comfortably work at any of those machines. And yeah, I mean,
so do you have multiple pieces going on at one time?
You know, at the moment I do. The idea with this kind of having three typewriters on this stand was that I was thinking about working on multiple things, being able to start something or go to something else, because I was finding I was having so many ideas, thinking I would remember them or I would get back to them, and then just thought, well, I have these typewriters all on this stand. I could just That could be kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Going
between your own
them.
Symphony.
Yeah, right. For sure.
Go back to the sketchbooks for a second.
Yeah.
That wasn't a practice that you had implemented earlier on. Something new?
No, that came, like I said, about 2013.
Yeah.
I think.
So you didn't do it in any form.
I never sketched.
But you wrote, so you're putting pen to paper in some way.
Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. I write inconsistently now. I write when I feel like writing. I don't make it like it's not. I don't come into the studio and write a page and then turn around and work on a drawing. I write when I need to write, and I sketch when I need to sketch.
Are you saving all of these, your writings and your sketches?
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you save them in a certain form?
No, I mean, a lot of the writing, because it's typed, is just individual sheets that then go mm-hmm. into a little manila envelope.
Right.
Into a file where I keep things. And the sketches, yeah, I have sketchbooks, although I'll doodle on paper, you know, single sheets of paper, but for a long, long time, sketchbooks were kind of I couldn't imagine working in a sketchbook. That just seems, I couldn't imagine how that worked, or because I didn't draw with a pencil. I relied on the machine. But then I can't really say what got me over that, you know, that distraction or that idea that I couldn't sketch. And I started sketching on individual sheets of paper with color, with like chalk and pastels and colored pencil. I think it was actually because someone gave me a huge ream of paper. It was kind of old, like it felt old and yellowy, like aged paper. The pieces are maybe 6 by 8 or 5 by 7. So they're small. So I would just sit, and I was having a lot of fun making these little drawings of color. And I've gone back and forth with using that as a way to think through a drawing that I want to make with the typewriter.
So what are you discovering now that you've done this for a spell and you've added this element of sketching and this spontaneous kind of gestures? What has it yielded for you?
I think it slowed me down. It's kind of slow. It slows me down to be more thoughtful and engaged with a form or forms or ideas. Although I will say I've noticed maybe in the past year or so that I can let myself get lost in the sketches and get kind of, it can kind of prevent me from moving on and actually committing and exploring something further. Because it's a lot easier to make a sketch than begin a different kind of drawing on a beautiful piece of abaca paper in the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
do you find you're often surprised?
There's still always some surprise. That's what's kind of exciting, is I sort of know when paper comes through the typewriter, because I'm using carbons or transfer, like once it comes through the top, I can always like peek and see a little bit and peek and see a little bit. Actually, I don't know if that's what you meant by being surprised.
Well, I'm thinking more of the surprise when you're sketching, that things happen on the paper, things come out, you have certain feelings or thoughts that surface that you just weren't aware of.
Not so much. I don't feel so surprised. I just think I feel more engaged than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain pencils I loved to work with, and I just could sit and make a pencil mark back and forth on the paper because it's so satisfying and beautiful to see the graphite. And
I'm so happy to hear this. It's a really, I mean, I think from my observations and being in studios and spending a lot of time with artists who draw, I mean, I've come to believe that for any artist in any medium, putting pen to paper metaphorically is just so important. It doesn't matter what form. It doesn't matter if it's in a journal or from a scrap of paper, but that moment of taking time, as you say, to slow down and just open your mind to whatever is going to come out of that hand, I think it's just so important to reaching the greater depths of your brain, those dark corners.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting, but it warms my heart to hear you talk about what this has added to your practice. Seems so important.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole subject of all the different kinds of papers that you've come to use. And I saw that you were interested in the thinnest paper. Before I forget, I want to remind you that I have somewhere in my email, if you haven't seen it, it was an article, I think, in the New York Times about the thinnest paper that's being made. Did you see that?
I saw that.
Yeah, I thought of you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so you have the article.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'd ask you, I mean, I asked this question, I think I might know the answer, and that is, tell me about a very transformative moment in the development of your work.
Well, I'm just pausing.
You can think. Pause.
There are, sure. Okay. There are, I suppose there are a few things. One would be leaving New York City and moving north, where I have more access to the natural landscape, where I felt in the city I was more, I mean, I live there, so everything is the man-made landscape and architecture, you know, which I love, and I felt that was informing the work. But I think living where I have for this period, almost 18 years, it's really the natural landscape that informs me and gives me more freedom. I feel like I'm curious what you thought. You said you thought you knew, but...
Well, I go back to the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment when you discovered the possibility for you.
Okay.
Through the typewriter.
Right, okay.
I mean, that seems pretty extraordinary to me.
Right, so
and
that...
Then, yeah.
Yeah, I can think, I know exactly that moment. I mean, I can visualize where
you
that all
you can feel
happened.
It almost, right? You can see it and
yeah.
feel it. Yeah.
Well, you know, I... Just now I'm looking in my studio, I have pinned the kind of first, sort of in quotes, the first typewriter drawing I made, which is just a grid of dotted lines, you know, in both directions, making this grid. And that was my first drawing, and that was when I was sitting at my desk where I lived in Boston, writing and then having stopped, and I was thinking too long. I sort of paused. So I was hitting the dash line of the typewriter, of electric typewriter. So it went right across. And I just kind of automatically, I just returned. I made another row. I went back and forth. I turned the paper once it came to the bottom so that the rows would go the other direction. And then I have the grid, which I feel like is my foundation. So I think, I don't know where I was thinking about when you originally asked that question, but of course, I mean, that grid is really the foundation for me. And I feel like when I was in school, I was kind of, everything was too expansive. There was no clarity. Making sculpture and writing and trying to figure it out, and somehow that grid just was like, whoop, just brought me into a very clear focus. And I always say, like, oh, that is my foundation. It still is. Everything comes out of this particular drawing at that moment. So, yeah, that is
the
moment. Yeah.
I also want to ask you about two things that are related, and that is the collaboration with a machinist, because you had the desire to work larger and you had to have something manufactured for you in order to continue with your practice in a larger scale.
Yeah. Yeah. That came from trying to draw on the wall directly, like hammering marks in the wall, replicating the machine. And, you know, I was using a screwdriver and a hammer, and I was hammering marks, and then I had these tools made. And that was the first step towards making a custom typewriter. It was two things. It was about being able to work on a larger scale and also developing marks that are kind of, I wouldn't really say my own, but, you know, I took drawings from like 93, 94, 95 and scanned those drawings in and isolated, like kind of zoomed in with a magnifying glass and excavated these new kind of marks. And then I worked with a machinist in Chatham, New York, who helped construct and build this custom typewriter with these custom marks. So we took out the English alphabet and inserted keys with my new marks, and each key, kind of like the uppercase, lowercase model, it has my mark, an outline of my mark, and then a solid form of the mark. And, yeah, that typewriter, I can work up to 36 inches wide. So that's pretty big for me, huge. I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, when you think about the typical sizes you've been working with, and then you go to that huge scale, which is huge in comparison.
Yeah.
It had to feel so different. It had to be different.
Yeah, it was
experience.
So, yeah, completely. It was always a question of, oh, does that mean now that the drawing becomes huge too, that I have, that the marks are huge? Or, you know, could a form that is on a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, could just that form exist on a bigger sheet of paper? Do you know what I mean? So the form and the marks didn't have to scale up to cover a, say, a 24 by 36 inch piece of paper.
And what happens to the paper when you embed it so densely in certain areas when it's that large?
Well, the custom machine is very different than the smaller standard machine. That was part of the problem for a long time, is I didn't love the machine because I didn't like how it made marks. It felt, it weren't very strong. It just felt, and then it just felt, it was different and I didn't like it, to be really clear. And I kept thinking, well, you know, I'm just so attached to what I know. I have to throw that away for the moment and just see this as a new machine and a new tool. And what does it do? I have to figure out, I have to see what it does and kind of relearn, or not relearn, but just start anew rather than bring everything I know about what I do to this machine. So I was kind of back and forth thinking about that. And then finally, I have this incredible typewriter genius repair person in North Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he totally revitalized this new machine because he rebuilt me using a better typewriter that was kind of healthier for what I wanted it to do. So for the past couple years, I've had this kind of refurbished new machine that is more familiar and handles a little bit more the way the others do, because that intense gesture and pounding of into the paper, both to like really put ink in it as well as potentially puncture it, is what I love about the machine. That's why I don't make these drawings on a computer, because I really love the texture and the kind of organic, suddenly like the paper and the marks, it just feels a little more organic, and that's what I wanted from this bigger machine, for it mm-hmm. to sort of act similarly. It's
there's
still
light too, there's light that comes through from those heavy embossed areas.
Yeah.
Which I think is critically important to your work.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why the thinnest paper possible and the, you know, the marks. You know, I used to think when the paper had too much weight and the marks needed to come off, that's when I literally make a three-dimensional object.
How much have you had to adjust or adapt your notion of what you wanted in the end? Has a part of that been reconciling to certain modifications?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a work in progress and still mm-hmm. figuring out.
Yeah, you
and
said
trying,
you still are figuring, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's still just trying to be open and less restrictive, less kind of contracting on my side about mm-hmm. what's available. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the other thing is it's just slow. It's a lot of work. A big drawing is pretty, I mean, a small drawing is a lot of labor for me too, but suddenly on that scale, it becomes something different. You know, I'm just looking at these drawings in my studio now, which when Tom replaced my machine for the custom typewriter, and I was trying to think about how to approach it, and drawing horizontal lines was kind of a go-to as a way of just sort of meditatively just working and thinking and doing. So I did make some large drawings where I was just standing there making horizontal lines across these big sheets of paper and putting down another sheet of carbon to build layers. But it was almost like the writing again, except I wasn't writing with words. But I think these drawings I made with just doing straight lines was kind of a way for me to enter that machine again and just sort of slow down and be kind of open, meditative, and just do and watch what it does.
You know,
and then go from there.
It's so striking to me because you're talking about the slowness and process, which I greatly appreciate, which obviously you embrace.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think about when I look at the work and I think about an electric typewriter and I think of speed,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that's what I see in my head. But it sort of belies what actually is going on in the process for you, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah. You know what I've done, just to say something about speed yep. and time, I had, you know, I primarily for a long time used the colon key, the colon mark.
Right.
So
I have some of those.
Yeah. So my friend and machinist, Tom, he adjusted all the machines I use so I can put the colon on. So the colon is a repetitive C stroke,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, in my world of time and the typewriter, it actually allows more to happen if I can just use the electric typewriter and have the colon be on repetitive C stroke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely goes quicker than how I used to just one finger, you know, you're just tap, tap, tap,
yeah,
tap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're running out of time, and there were just a couple other things I wanted to get to because I feel they're important.
Okay.
And one is the repetition of sound in your process. Mm-hmm. And the other is a quote that I found where you said, what I bring into the studio is from experience outside of it. And I feel that's such a good statement and something really important for graduate students to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I just, you know, it just makes me think about an education and that in school, like, I just would never recommend anyone going and getting a fine arts degree because I don't think it gives you the experience and education of the world you live and the life and everything that's going on. Like, it just doesn't help clarify or help you kind of learn who you are in the world by living in the world and through other experiences. To just show up and go in a studio and start making something, how can you do that without having your experience come with you? And so then what is your experience? If you're not, you know, I don't know. I just feel like you have to
And your experience is what makes you uniquely you, which then
right.
is delivered through the work.
Right.
And then talk about this process, the sound and the repetition,
sound.
The sound of the typewriters. And you mentioned your dad, musician, and the rhythm, and mm-hmm. there has to be a relationship somewhere in there.
There sure. probably is. I mean, I used to play piano when I was a kid. And, you know, my husband has been for years and years saying we should record you making a drawing. You don't have to do it.
That's such a great idea.
I know. I have to get to it. I'm extremely slow at everything.
I want one of those. Put me on the list.
Okay. I'll send you this audio file. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I had a teacher in college who wanted me to, like, show up for my review. I mean, he was very kind of a big personality and performer. I'm not a performer. I wouldn't have ever been able to sit and, like, perform, use my typewriter as a performance of making a drawing. That's not me. But it was just about the sound. I was very, very much into the sound and the rhythm when I first started making my work. I was counting in my head, and I was very, like, very much aware of the sound of a drawing because it was more about sort of a informal geometry and about, you know, making a form, making two forms on a page of somewhat equal distance, so I'd have to space and think about it. So it was all connected, the mark, the sound, the time, pace, and I loved it. But completely told me.
God, I would love to have a sound component to show your drawings. That would be so phenomenal.
Okay.
That's a great idea. I think on that note.
I am going to do it. I will
do it
and let you know
I
have it for you.
You know, I'm very interested in these crossovers. And when we do exhibitions and we encourage students to really think, you know, there are no boundaries. So graduate schools who work with the collection are incorporating dance. They're incorporating music. We've had chamber music groups interpret. We've had dancers interpret. You know, all of that in the mix helps us all read and feel the drawing so much more powerfully. It's really, it just gives us a new avenue in, that's all. So.
Yeah. Oh,
well, I could
exciting.
Talk to you for another hour, but sadly
I
restricted myself to 45 minutes.
Okay.
And I'm so grateful to have had this time with you, Allison.
Thank you so much.
I revisit the work, and it's funny, I'm sitting here at my home in Colorado looking out the landscape and the dappled light through the leaves, and I'm thinking about your pieces where I see that light
heaven.
In a similar way, you know, through the work, so in those papers. But I'm glad you're getting geared to go back to work in the studio. I'm glad that you and your family have managed and everyone's healthy. And one day we will get together. I would hope that would happen.
I hope so.
And I thank you so much for your
time. Yeah, thank you so much for your interest always and support.
Well, I follow it closely. Okay, be well. Bye.
Okay, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.